Hey, this is John Lee Dumas from EO Fire, and you're listening to Elective Rotation with Pharmacy Joe. You must be prepared to ignite.
What's up, Pharmacy Nation? I'm Pharmacy Joe. Thank you for listening to the Elective Rotation, a critical care pharmacy podcast. This is episode 21, How to Participate and Give Pharmacy Recommendations on ICU Rounds. If you find this podcast helpful, please tell a friend or colleague about it, or send them the link to the show notes for this episode at pharmacyjoe.com/episode21. Back in episode 20, I discussed how to prepare for ICU rounds. In this episode, I'll be talking about how ICU rounds are structured and how I participate in ICU rounds, including when and how I present my recommendations. For context, know that I am in a 20-bed community hospital, open medical surgical ICU. There are no physician residents. Although the ICU is open, hospitalists and most physicians defer management of the patient to the intensivist. About a dozen intensivists and three mid-level providers rotate providing coverage for the ICU, with one mid-level and one physician being present during the day shift when rounds occur. The structure of rounds at my community hospital is this. First, the team. The physician, the patient's nurse, charge nurse, pharmacist, respiratory therapist, and dietitian are the service providers that most regularly attend ICU rounds. The time and location for rounds is 10 a.m. outside of room 1. But these are not strict, and the time and location will often change based on the acuity of patients that morning. The roles for each healthcare provider, typically the physician will present the patient, which really amounts to a one or two sentence explanation of who the patient is and why they are in the ICU. The physician will then ask the nurse to complete a systems-based review of the patient following RICHMAN, which stands for respiratory, infection, cardiac, hematologic, metabolic, alimentary, and neurologic. And this is also the review format that the physicians use in their ICU progress notes. After this review of systems, each member of the team is expected to offer any recommendations or ask any appropriate questions before moving on to the next patient. Any prophylaxis or checklist items, such as central line or Foley days that were not covered in the review of systems, is usually discussed here as well. So, when do I present my recommendations? The most effective time to give recommendations to a provider is when they are trying to solve the patient's problems. So I try as much as possible to be elbow to elbow with the providers as they are seeing the patient and determining orders. Getting the best recommendation accepted at the beginning of care is so much easier than trying to change therapy later. I'll give a quick example from a couple weeks ago. We had a patient with an upper GI bleed that was cirrhotic, and they were on Levaquin as their antibiotic therapy. Now, antibiotic therapy in these type of GI bleed patients is known to lower mortality, but typically the recommendation is to use ceftriaxone. So we came and gave a recommendation to ceftriaxone, but it was about a day and a half after the Levaquin was started, and the patient was doing fine. And the physician didn't really want to change anything at this point. It was a, if it's not broke, let's not fix it situation. But had we been there at the very beginning when the orders were being generated, it would have been very easy to get the provider to use ceftriaxone first. I also prefer to give many of my basic recommendations related to prophylaxis or renal dose adjustments to the provider via a sticky note placed in their workflow. I give specific examples of how I use sticky notes in episode 20. You can find that episode by going to pharmacyjoe.com/episode20. Then I can review the orders for the patient on rounds to double check that the recommendations I left on a sticky note were accepted. The key is to place this unofficial note in a spot that I know is within the physician's workflow. This could be the flow sheet, the physician's computer screen, or in the case of intensivist Anna, a clipboard that she has with her specifically for sticky notes to be placed on. Then during rounds, I make my recommendations during the discussion of the relevant system. For example, I'll ask for stress ulcer prophylaxis when alimentary is being discussed, or antibiotic changes during the discussion of infection. There are two main things I keep in mind when presenting recommendations on ICU rounds. They are, number one, has the provider seen the patient yet? Number two, what are the goals of care? So for has the provider seen the patient yet? When giving a recommendation, I try to be mindful of whether or not the provider has seen and evaluated the patient yet that day. If they have not, I always start my recommendation with, I know you haven't seen the patient yet. The reason I do this is that I have found providers have a defensive reflex when they are being asked to change something they haven't evaluated yet. Prefacing my recommendation in this way diffuses the potential issue and allows my recommendation to be considered just on its merits. It's like saying, I know it's not your fault, but... And now, what are the goals of care? I've described myself to providers before like a blind golf caddy. A caddy knows the ins and outs of when and how to use each club, just like I should know the ins and outs of when and how to use each drug. But I can't always see the course clearly. I'll explain. The team is discussing how to control a patient's acute agitation on rounds. I could easily recommend giving benzodiazepines in escalating doses until the patient is controlled. But what if the patient's ejection fraction is 15%? The physician may feel that this patient would be impossible to wean from a ventilator because of this, and therefore the risk of respiratory depression from using benzodiazepines may be too great. Sometimes I pick up on this type of thing during my pre-rounding, which I also cover in episode 20, but not always, hence my blind golf caddy analogy. I will frequently explicitly ask what the goals of care are before providing my recommendations. Here are some examples. For controlling agitation, I ask, can we intubate this patient if we give too many sedatives? This helps me decide which sedatives I should use, how aggressive my dosing should be, and which sedatives I should avoid. For weaning off long-term fentanyl infusions, I ask, is the fentanyl infusion the only thing keeping the patient in the ICU? This helps me choose how aggressively to wean the fentanyl. Just this week, I asked, do you think the patient might have necrotizing fasciitis? This helped me decide whether to add a dose of clindamycin to decrease toxin production before the patient went to the OR for source control. A special circumstance to consider is when the team feels that care is futile, but the advanced directives have not been changed yet to reflect this. Earlier this week, I had a very elderly patient on 5 pressors with a lactate of 15. On rounds, I noticed her piperacillin tazobactam needed renal adjustment. It seemed obvious given the team's discussion that this patient was not going to survive her critical illness, and a discussion with the family was going to occur before the next antibiotic dose was due. I elected to withhold my recommendation, knowing that I could always give it later if the family did not decide to pursue comfort measures for the patient. Last, I want to share something I've recently discovered about evidence-informed practices for rounds. Linked up in the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode21 is an article I've recently come across titled Systematic Review of Evidence-Informed Practices for Patient Care Rounds in the ICU. Now, this was published in Critical Care Medicine 2013. I've shared this article with some members of the ICU team at my hospital, and I think it has interesting implications for improving the way ICU rounds are conducted. In this article, there are many practice recommendations given based on various levels of evidence. Here are the six strong recommendations given in the article. Number one, implement multidisciplinary rounds, including at least a medical doctor, registered nurse, and a pharmacist. Number two, standardize location, time, and team composition. Number three, define explicit roles for each healthcare provider participating on rounds. Number four, develop and implement a structured tool like a best practices checklist. Number five, minimize unnecessary interruptions. Number six, focus discussions on development of daily goals and document all discussed goals in the health record. So I'd love to hear from you. How is it that you participate on rounds, and do you discuss all of the goals that are discussed on rounds? Do you chart them in the health record like this systematic review recommends? That's something that's not currently done at my hospital, so I'd love to hear how it's done elsewhere. And remember, you can share the show notes for this episode by going to pharmacyjoe.com/episode21. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you in the next episode of the Elective Rotation.